Republican majorities at the state capitol would like to wrap up a budget in a few weeks. Here in the midst of the process of that always intriguing experience, we're pleased to be joined by a key mid-Michigan participant, 68th District Democratic State Representative Andy Shore of Lansing. Shore's been active in May, launching and announcing support for measures involving voting reform, women's health, and many other measures. Nice to have you back to Current State, Andy.
It's great to be here, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Where is the budget process right now, in your view, in general, and what concerns you the most?
Well, in terms of process, the budget has passed both chambers and is in conference, is about to go into conference committee so they can decide the final pieces. The legislature, the House and the Senate have both passed budgets. The consensus revenue estimating conference, which is an estimate of how much money we actually have, has met and has found that we've got about $500 million more than we thought we did, and another $200 million ongoing money than we thought we did. So there's money to play with that can be used to backfill programs, to pay off debts, to put away in the bank account, a variety of different areas. So the Republicans are in charge in the House and the Senate and the governor's office, and their three leaders will sit down and have those discussions. It'd be nice if they included some of the Democratic leaders, but that's not always the case. And they will try and figure out what to do with that money and how to finalize the budget. We still have a few fairly big outstanding issues. The governor proposed to accept expanded Medicaid dollars to cover 400,000 more people and save the state a ton of money that we're paying right now in uncompensated care when people go to the emergency rooms and don't have health insurance. So that's still hanging out there because the governor proposed it. The Republicans in the House and now the Senate have said no. But we have a bill in the House that we have been taking hours and hours of testimony on, which would sort of accept the money, except it would place lifetime caps on Medicaid recipients. It would require co-pays. It would say that we can only take the money for 3 years. When I say Medicaid recipients, these are people who are making about $15,500 a year and have no health insurance. So we're looking at that in the House.
You're looking at a measure with a 3-year time limit.
It's what the measure says is it says as long as the federal government is paying 100%, then we can accept the money. But you have to have the lifetime caps. You have to have co-pays and other things, which is not allowed under federal law. So the 3-year time limit it reflects the fact that the feds are going to pay 100% for 3 years, and then after that, they slowly ratchet it down to about 90%. The governor has a great plan, actually, he put in where we would accept the money and bank some of it and then pay, use the banked money to pay the amount that Michigan would be responsible for. But the Republicans so far have rejected that plan and put forward their own, saying as long as the feds are going to give us the money, we'll take it, but we're only going to allow people to be on Medicaid for 4 years max, and then they're thrown off and they're on their own. So there's some problems with the plan, but we're having those conversations now in the House.
Let's get to a comment that we heard yesterday on the program. As you pointed out, many Republicans have been calling for more skin in the game, as they say, from any new recipients of an expanded Medicaid program here in Michigan, meaning a more active role in their health, higher co-pays, more involvement in obesity and smoking cessation. Yesterday, here on the program, a local guy you know, Dennis Litos, called for that as well. Mr. Litos is the CEO of the new nonprofit health insurance co-op, Consumers Mutual. Here he is from yesterday.
You know, you need to have skin in the game. And the one thing about the Affordable Care Act and the subsidy program is that individuals have to contribute to their premium. They have to contribute to their out-of-pocket costs. And to the degree to which they are on the lower end of income, they get a little bit more subsidy, in fact, to do that. And on the higher end of income, a little less subsidy. So I think that if you want to design a new Medicaid expansion program to have a little bit more out-of-pocket for the individuals, that will work okay. You know, I think the argument to that is that, you know, if that ends up being additional uncompensated care or bad debts that can't be collected by your healthcare providers, it creates a bit of a challenge. But I think everybody having skin in the game today is the appropriate thing for healthcare.
So what struck me about that is that it's not uncommon to hear a politician come down one side or the other, but this was a local, pretty well established health official calling for more skin in the game. How Where is this going?
But you know, let me talk about what he said first. There is, you know, there are several incentives built into the bill, and there are some co-pays in the federal program. Let's talk about the skin in the game argument. So you're making $15,300 a year. You are working. These are not, you know, people who are not working sitting on their couch eating bonbons. These are working people who are making $15,300 a year. That's the 133%. That's the top end that's covered under Medicaid expansion. The bill that's in front of us right now says you have to pay up to 5% in co-pays. So you're making $15,300 a year. You're, you know, what does that buy you? That buys you food, that buys you some prescription drugs, maybe a pretty beat up car. Now you're going to take from that $15,000, $1,000 that you're paying for health care. You know, that's the skin in the game we're talking about. We're saying your skin in the game is taking food out of your mouth and preventing you from having a car to get to work and things like that. So that's a concern to me, that these are not people who are making a lot of money who have to contribute. These are not people who are sitting there doing nothing. These are people who are working part-time jobs, minimum wage jobs. That's a big concern. Now, you asked where are we? The House has taken two committee meetings of testimony, and we're going to do two more next week. I see some big changes in the bill. You know, the bill right now says basically an able-bodied adult would only have 4 years of coverage, and then they're thrown off. And an able-bodied adult is basically defined as someone who's between the ages of 21 and 65. And I had asked several questions, you know, what does that mean? What about, you know, the sponsor of the bill said they want to come in and they want people who are in bad jobs to get better jobs. And if they're obese and smoking to get into better shape and have muscles instead of fat and all of that. And that's laudable. And I like the idea of the incentives for those things. But what do you do when someone is pregnant? What do you do when someone has diabetes or cancer? You can't work out and get rid of diabetes. You can't work out and not be pregnant and get in better shape. Those people need to be covered also under this Medicaid expansion. And that and the sponsor agreed with me, and we need to work through a lot of those questions. And that's something that I'm hoping that we're going to do over the next, you know, week or two.
Well, one more question on Medicaid expansion. We'll move on because there's so much other stuff to talk about. Is a really flawed Medicaid expansion measure preferable to none at all?
You know, still trying to decide that. The proposal they have right now isn't just really flawed. It's not legal under the federal law. We would need some pretty massive waivers from the Federal Affordable Care Act, and we have had a lot of testimony on that, and many think, including the governor's office, the director, Jim Havman, of the department, that he said it's not going to happen. We're not going to get waivers. So if we don't get a waiver, this is just spinning our wheels. We're going through all of this. We're not going to get a waiver from the federal government, and there's going to be no acceptance of the Medicaid expansion. The Republicans would like to blame it on the feds, but the reality is this is the law. This is what it takes to get this money. So we very likely will not be able to if this is how we pass it, because we won't get a waiver.
Let's move on here. The state treasurer, as you mentioned, the state treasury is now expected to come into $483 million more than anticipated for fiscal year 2013, the one we're in now. This is according to the new revenue projections. How should that money be allocated in your view?
Well, in my view, over the last few years, there have been pretty significant cuts to education. We've seen a new pension tax. We've seen the loss of our homestead credits and a variety of other credits that we've been seeing being able to take on our taxes. In my view, we need to backfill a little bit of that. We need to – our Lansing schools has gone from $7,300 per pupil to $7,100 per pupil in the governor's first 2 years. And when the governor did that, he said, we're gonna make all these cuts. We're going to write the budget. Then we're going to reinvest. I would like to see our cities start seeing some money reinvested. You know, we're passing local millages. We have a 4 mil increase in Lansing, but our cities have had 0% increase. I'd like to see our schools receive some backfill in dollars. I think that we need to go back to those that we have cut and say, okay, you've been cut. Now we need to backfill that money in order to show that now that the economy is getting better, we are going to ensure that you're getting the dollars you need for our kids, for our local residents. You know, look at taking the pension tax off the books, maybe restore some of the credits so that our citizens, our middle class, are not the ones taking the brunt of this. That's what we need to put the money back into.
There are some purposes for which this money could not be used, as I understand it, at least. But everything you've just mentioned revoking the pension tax, for example. That could be moved on.
We can use it for anything. I mean, the money is general fund money, so we can use it really for anything. The question that really needs to be answered is this one-time money that's only for this year, that's not going to happen next year, or is it continual money? In the last two or three years, you know, we've seen increases when we've done the consensus revenue conference at the very end of the budget process. So it seems like there is more money in the budget to go around. It will be year to year. The economy is getting better. So it's just a question of, do we want to put money into something one time and risk not having that again next year? Or, you know, do you want to use that to pay down pension debt? Or, you know, I think the some of the Republicans are calling to put it into the rainy day fund when we, you know, we've already put a significant amount of money in the rainy day fund and they want to put some more in. Those are the questions that are being thrown around now.
We're talking with Lansing State Rep. Andy Shore of the 68th. Most recently, you've launched a package of bills involving voting reform.
Sure.
What problems do these bills address?
Well, one of the big problems is here in East Lansing, we saw in the last election, a gentleman tried to use a signature stamp when he voted to sign his ballot. Under the current, he's disabled, he's got ALS, got Lou Gehrig's disease. Under the current law, you can't do that. You can put an X on your ballot, you can make your mark, but you can't use a signature stamp with your signature on your ballot. So I introduced a bill that would allow for signature stamps to be able to be used. It's an aid for those who are disabled who at one time could sign and now can't sign. They've got it on file with the clerk and they use their signature stamp. That was brought up in committee, and we had a really good hearing. We had, you know, the clerk of East Lansing there to testify in support. She did a great job, and I can see that bill moving. The second bill I had is a little more controversial. Right now, when you go into a voting booth, if you vote, you go, you put your ballot in the machine, and then, you know, you want your friend to take a picture of you voting so you can put it up on Facebook. Mm-hmm. That happens a lot. You go to Facebook on election day, and you see all these people, I voted, and pictures in the voting booth. I've seen sitting state representatives now who've had their picture taken. We had the Secretary of State, Ruth Johnson. She did this when she went in to vote, you know, to vote a few years ago. You know, I think the Lieutenant Governor did this. We, you know, you see a lot of this. Well, it's all illegal. It's all illegal. If you take a picture of yourself anywhere in a poll site voting, and you put it up on Facebook and someone in the Secretary of State's office sees it, they can disallow your vote. They can completely wipe out your vote because it's illegal.
And the Secretary of State did it.
She did it, and then they took it off. Somebody found it and said, you got to take that off. So they took it off.
Okay.
So now that bill has been more controversial because the Secretary of State's office and local clerks are saying that there really is no way to allow for photographs in a poll site because you might accidentally take a picture of someone else and it could violate their rights. So there have been a lot of questions about that. You know, my intention was to allow people to be able to take a picture in a poll site of themselves, but not of their actual ballot. It's seen a lot more questions. And again, the Secretary of State, even though she did this a few years ago, is opposing that bill. As are several of the clerks, so we're going to have some conversation. I'm just trying to figure out a way to take something that people do that's illegal and make it allowed where it makes sense.
Are you prepared for Mark Schauer to announce for governor?
I am. I think Mark is great. I've known him for many years. When he was in the legislature, he was a very thoughtful legislator. He was a great congressman. I think he would be a wonderful gubernatorial candidate if he decides to run.
If the state, you probably followed George Fulton's projections. The U of M economist George Fulton said Wednesday he expects a moderate and broad-based economic recovery to continue in Michigan. If that recovery continues the way George Fulton forecasts, how much harder might it be to vote out Rick Snyder?
I don't know. You know, there's a lot of different pieces to the economy. The federal government assisted our automotive companies, and Michigan has a lot of reliance on automotive jobs and supplemental jobs. You know, it's all political. You know, the Democrats are going to say the economy is getting better because of Barack Obama and not Rick Snyder, and the Republicans are going to say the economy is getting better because of Rick Snyder and not Barack Obama, and it's all political. And we'll all get the mail, and we'll all see the TV ads, and you know, I don't know. I think there are some people who are very upset with the governor out there over some of the things that happened last year and recently. But I'm sure that there will be a very healthy campaign. I'm sure It will start soon. The governor hasn't even announced his intention to run for re-election, although I assume he will. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's all part of the campaign.
Democrat Andy Shore represents the 68th state district here, representing Lansing. We appreciate your stopping by. Thanks, Andy.
Thanks for having me.